Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, it's official. Facebook's getting into the newsreader business with an app called Paper. Plus, Twitter for Android is updated before iOS. And how to keep your boss really, really happy next time you travel. All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 147, recorded January 30th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, plus free 3-day shipping, go to warbyparker.com/socialhour. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/socialhour to receive a free Power Pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour, episode 147. From Petaluma, California, where Twit is world headquartered, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Just got back here late last night from Phoenix, Sarah.
Funny enough. What were you doing there, if I might ask?
You know, I'd love to say that I went to a spa, I was on vacation, but I was actually speaking at a conference about the future of retail, which was interesting and a beautiful resort. I was there for a full 48 hours, which is longer than normal. But, you know, I always forget how far Phoenix is from Toronto and how close I was to California. I should have just ducked over and done the show with you there, Sarah.
I know, it's basically the same state. No, actually, not really. It's a lot closer to, I don't know, it's far. From here, anyway. But, we've been talking about the weather as we do at the beginning of the show. And last week, everybody was wringing their hands because it didn't rain here ever. And the weather's actually been very, very nice. And there's really no reason to complain. But it's a little strange that we're sort of in this weird drought winter. But it did start raining yesterday. So I welcomed the cloud cover. Carl the Fog was back in San Francisco. That's the name of the fog. He has a name, and his name is Carl. And it's very refreshing, Amber. So it seems right with the world, at least on the West Coast. Again.
Well, you know what? I will say that we are heating up here in Toronto. And in fact, a little bit of warming happening over the next couple of days. I hear it's going to go up to -3 Celsius, which compared to the past couple of weeks. Okay, the audio listener, Sarah's face is in shock right now. That is warming up compared to the last couple of weeks. So it's good news. This has been the coldest, harshest winter that I can ever remember in Toronto. So I think people will appreciate it when we just get over the freezing level.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying that, I mean, that's pretty cold. I will say, and I know that a lot of people are really struggling. And there's been some, you know, snow and terrible cold snaps in areas of the country that really don't get this kind of weather, at least in the U.S., some of the lower southern states. But I have watched several videos, Amber, of cats playing in snow for the first time because they live in climates where it usually doesn't snow. And that is just funny. Because they don't know they don't know why it's wet. They don't know why it's cold. They don't know why it's white. Okay. It's like, what happened to my earth?
That is definitely cute overload, Sarah.
Yeah, really,
you know,
is.
Usually we don't get into cats until the end of the show,
right,
but it looks like you're switching it up this week.
I thought I'd just throw it out there. You know, just get it out of the way. It out of the way. Some cats. You know, we'll also not really get out of the way, but I was excited that we had heard rumors earlier this month. Mike Isaac at Recode was the first to write up the story that Facebook was coming out with its own standalone newsreader app, dubbed Paper, which I thought was a little bit weird because there is already an app called Paper, although it's not a newsreader. It's more of a, you know, sketch, kind of like sketchbook type of app. It's really nice, but doesn't really have anything to do with Facebook's app. It's not actually launching until I think it's February 3rd. So we've got a couple of days, but it is an official thing. And Facebook has, you know, it has a nice little intro video. The idea is, I guess Facebook, Amber, you and I were talking about an article that we both saw in our Facebook news feed that I thought was kind of funny about neighborhoods and hipsters and whatever. But I think Facebook really has sort of an issue with a certain kind of article being shared on Facebook, and you don't really take it seriously as a place to get your news. You and I both, for example, use Twitter a lot more than Facebook for anything that we, you know, consider breaking news and serious stuff. This app looks really nice to me, but I just don't know how Facebook can change my mind, because design aside, it's all really about the quality of content.
I know. You know, that is still the biggest issue that I have with Facebook. I, you know, we've mentioned this on the show many times before. I love the fact that I can find out what friends and relatives are doing. But at the end of the day, when it comes to content, I just find that it's almost like reading the National Enquirer when I look through the newsfeed for the most part, in the sense that I just don't feel like the quality is there. I mean, it's kind of a depressing view when I look at my newsfeed, because it's all the negative news stories, really sensational stories, a lot of people complaining about Justin Bieber, and the list goes on and on. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if people will look to Facebook as a place where they're consuming content like this. It seemed to me it was more about connecting with people you know, but this makes sense in some ways, because this is the route that many networks have gone. Look at LinkedIn. I mean, more than ever, it becomes a network where it's all about thought leadership and articles and content more than just connecting. So it seems like this is a big theme for 2014, and Facebook obviously trying to leap onto that.
Yeah, there's so many news apps. Inside.com was another news reader that's not algorithmic at all, but human-powered, that launched earlier this week, Jason Calacanis and his team. But what's interesting about paper is that if you think about the Facebook algorithm, I mean, that's sort of that is the heart of Facebook. Everything that we see in our news feed is a tailored experience based on the friends that we have, the things that we've liked in the past, that sort of thing. But this news reader is not pure algorithmic. It's also human editors that are being hired. Probably they already have a team, but are continuing to hire people to choose what is news. And that's interesting too, because that's really not the way Facebook has ever worked in the past. I mean, like it or not, the algorithm is sort of the algorithm. It's really based on your history to try to give you what you want to see. I don't have a problem with other people curating my news experience at all, but it does seem very un-Facebook-like, and I wonder how much that's going to creep into other parts of the Facebook experience as well.
Yeah, definitely. I just got a tweet from Casey on Twitter who says, I actually get pretty good news articles on my feed. I usually use Facebook for the quick hits and RSS for more in-depth news. So clearly a lot of people are depending on it for articles. I did read a post, and I don't know if it was a link that you had put in the rundown, but I read a post where it talked about the fact that it mentioned Medium, just in the sense that Medium is such a beautiful place where people are blogging and writing articles, and perhaps Facebook wanted to be a little bit more like that in terms of the aesthetics and what this looked like and the reading experience. And it just made me think overall, is this something where Zuckerberg and his team are also thinking people would create original content? Or is it just stuff you're linking to?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess. I mean, news is news. If Facebook wants to be writing original content or having people that are submitting original content that would be possibly promoted on this, I don't know. That does sound a little bit not really what Facebook does. I certainly don't want Facebook cluttering up my news experience with stuff that it wants to show me. We'll leave that for the, you know, PR section of Facebook. But I guess more than anything, it really comes down to a matter of how do you like to absorb your news. You know, we have this conversation at Twit all the time, because it's like we've got a variety of shows and sometimes there's overlap of news, and we know that, you know, there are a lot of people who are not going to watch every single podcast out there that has to do with the subject that they like. You kind of find the stuff that works for you, and that's what works for you. And I find that news consumption on the web for me is the same way. There's only a finite amount of time in the day, and I feel like I've got a pretty good routine down. So every time there's sort of a new, hey, here's a new spin on how you get your news, it's shorter, there's more summaries, it's based on robot algorithms, it's from Facebook, it's like, I just don't find that there's some need that I have that Facebook's filling.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one. Although Facebook is turning 10 years old. I just wanted to mention that. Whew. I think it's next Tuesday. They're celebrating their 10th anniversary. So hard to believe the site has been around for a decade. And I think after this long in the online space, in some ways, they need to almost reinvent themselves so that they're still relevant. And so I think we'll see a lot more of them trying new things in 2014. Also, an interesting article here about Twitter. We have a couple of things about Twitter. It seems like a pretty Twitter-heavy news week. Twitter getting some new search filters for news, video, and people you follow. And this is for the web version of Twitter, which I use a lot, Sarah. I know you don't use it all that much.
I don't, but and it's funny because when I do go to twitter.com, it's usually because I've heard that there's some new design change and I want to see it for myself. But yeah, this is good stuff because sometimes when I'm searching for, let's say there's like a helicopter over my neighborhood in San Francisco where I live, and it's like, what's up with that? I can go to Twitter and I can say something like search for tweets that have the word helicopter near me, or just from people I follow that, because I follow a lot of people who live in the same city as me. Those sorts of things can help you narrow down your search, because obviously Twitter is just, there's so many millions of tweets to look through that searching blindly can sometimes be like finding a needle in a haystack. So this is actually something that Tweetbot has had for a long time. And, this is, I'm always talking about Tweetbot, but I love it for this reason, is that if I go ahead and say search and I search for, a helicopter, I don't hear a helicopter right now, so I'm not really expecting to see anything like this, but it's like nearby tweets with helicopter, that sort of thing. That's helpful to me. So I'm kind of used to this idea, but it sounds like Twitter is catching up with its iOS and Android apps that both have this search functionality. I think both of those were updated with this goodness back in November. So it's kind of Twitter just keeping up with itself.
Yeah, and I think traditionally Twitter hasn't been that great in terms of the search functionality. So it's good to see that these features coming to the web. And just like you, Sarah, that's one of the things that I do all the time. I mean, I'm always searching for Leslieville, the little community I live in Toronto. And that's how I'll search for local news about Leslieville, because more and more I care about my neighborhood news more than the city at large, because it's such a big place. So I think they're realizing how people are using Twitter and making it easier for them to be able to search through all of this. This next article, though, I feel like I kind of want to roll my eyes. I don't know why. Maybe it's the headline. CNN announces partnership with Twitter to revolutionize news gathering.
Oh, I feel, I know. Like it's anytime like CNN wants to revolutionize something, I roll my eyes a little bit too. This is an interesting partnership, though, because what Twitter and CNN have decided to do is, let's say, yeah, there's a CNN reporter that's working on some sort of a... We have the U.S. Airways plane that landed in the Hudson Bay as an example. But that is actually a good example, even though that was a couple years ago now, of something that was like, well, people were Instagramming pictures of it and putting it up on Twitter before anyone really knew what was going on. I mean, that's where the news was coming from, and you kind of want to make sense of it. What Twitter has done is they've teamed up with a company called Dataminr, which is basically using Twitter's fire hose of information, just all the stuff that's coming out of Twitter, and making some sense of it, kind of putting it into context. Then CNN reporters will have access to that. So if you're working on a story and you want to figure out what's happened on Twitter already, how can I use this in my reporting efforts and make the story as rich in media as possible? That's basically what they've got there. The fact that it's CNN is almost irrelevant. I think this is probably something that all newsrooms, either Twitter's going to have relationships with all of the different networks, or the different networks are going to figure out who else to pull from. I think Twitter's the strongest contender of this sort of like social news stream right now. But, where's the Facebook partnership? I mean, I wonder if that's just right around the corner.
Yeah, and I mean, more and more news organizations, I think, are just realizing how much they are dependent on Twitter. So I do think the article is interesting. It was funny, I'm on an internal email list for one of the local news channels because I do some work with them. And yesterday there was this big pile up because of all the snow just outside of Toronto. And it was interesting because they said they started to learn information about the pile up based on just looking through Twitter and reading what people are writing. And then as far as visuals that they were going to put on TV, all they had was some pictures that they found down on Twitter, and then they had someone who was shooting some iPhone viz at the scene because it was 2 hours away from Toronto. They just couldn't get there in time. So it just makes me think about how much things have changed in the past few years. I remember working in a newsroom in 2006 and wanting to use some of these tools, but the reality is you got a lot of pushback, and now they're so important to the whole conversation around breaking news.
Yeah, it's cool. It makes me think, okay, well, Twitter's the sort of the obvious place where there's so much news, and Twitter is such a good tool, but it needs organization. So you've got this middleman data company, data miner, that Twitter and CNN are using kind of as, you know, the funnel between the two. That makes perfect sense. But, you know, what about something like Instagram? Instagram is, you know, it's photo-based. But as far as on the scene stuff goes, it's perfect. You know, you've got your smartphone in your pocket. You see a car crash or whatever. You know, you take a photo, and now you can take a video. You upload. I mean, that's all of these places. They're all providing this potentially very, very helpful citizen journalism. And we've talked about that for years. But it seems like finally the networks are figuring out how to be able to leverage these tools.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just the news organizations, but also local authorities. I think that's interesting to see how progressive a lot of the police departments have been in various cities. I know we had Timothy Burrows, he's a sergeant in Toronto, who was on the show a while ago just talking about how different police departments are using social media, and for the most part, watching them kind of watch what's happening to see some of this breaking news just so that they can be first on the scene. So it's like this little race that's happening on Twitter.
Yeah.
See who can stay on top of everything.
Speaking of Twitter, we weren't joking when we said it was Twitter Roundup. Great, you mentioned Medium a couple minutes ago, Amber, which is a blogging platform. There's it's not a great post. It's actually kind of a tragic post on Medium from a Twitter user who explains how he lost his Twitter username. And it's not just any Twitter username, because his Twitter username was at N, as in the letter N, which is one of those names where you go, gosh, that's pretty cool. How do you get that? So, you know, he's obviously he was on Twitter quite early. He said he had been offered as much as $50,000 to give up that Twitter handle, never accepted, but he knew it was something that, you know, it was pretty cool. And he goes on to explain, and it's kind of a convoluted story, but in essence, somebody hacked him, his personal domain, which was registered with GoDaddy, and he had set up PayPal to be able to keep his domain updated. And through a bunch of circumstance that he sort of saw unfolding before his eyes, because he got sort of a bunk email that was about getting his credit card information that was supposed to come from GoDaddy, and he could tell that it was a phishing scam, and he ignored it. GoDaddy didn't have the right security in place, and he ended up losing the Twitter handle because it was taken over by the attacker. Again, through no fault of his own, but then he wrote this crazy story about it, and it really shows how incompetent some of these companies are.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, this is a great story. Sorry, I was almost fascinated with the story on Medium because I didn't realize before on Medium how people could attach little comments to different paragraphs the article. Mm-hmm. And that is very slick. Nonetheless, yeah, it's a really thorough story. I also thought it was interesting because I think he shares some tips for people to remain more secure when they're storing information with people. Well, one of the tips being don't give your credit card information to PayPal or GoDaddy if you can avoid it. But he also talks about how if he had used his Gmail account, he would have been much safer because they ended up hacking in to GoDaddy and getting his email from there. So his using a custom domain for his email, which is what he was doing. So he has some tips as well built into the article. But a little bit frightening to see how easily these guys got into his account. And it seems at the end of the day that he's fairly happy that he doesn't have to worry about it's at N, right? That was his Twitter account. That he doesn't have to worry about it anymore because it was causing him so many problems because it was so popular. So a great little read here.
You know, it's funny how having something that's a cool Twitter handle like at N, or I know somebody who's at X. That's pretty cool too. And one word Twitter names are, in one hand, it's like, oh, that's cool because You know, it's like if I was at Sarah, then I'm like, you know, the best Sarah on Twitter. But anybody who actually just has one of those either single letter or first name or something that's, you know, really popular word, they'll all tell you the same thing, that most of the at replies they get are just intended for somebody else. Gibberish, don't make sense because people don't really understand how to use Twitter. My friend Ryan Block, who's at Ryan on Twitter, says that, you know, he's always saying that anytime American Idol comes around for another season, everyone's trying to get a hold of Ryan Seacrest, but they're actually talking to him, and he's just like, I give up. You know, it's a mess. It's like, they're just, you never underestimate how people get confused about things like that.
What do people, you know, this is the strangest thing to me because I see people doing this all the time, but I can't even imagine thinking, oh, when I go to Twitter, just the most famous Ryan I know, he's automatically going to have that Twitter name. It makes me lose faith in terms of the intelligence of the general population.
Oh, but, right. Or add Ryan, then, you know, hit the space bar and then you write Seacrest and then you think it's the Twitter syntax. It just hasn't really sunk in for everybody. But yes, hopefully not having at N will help our friend with his I don't know. It's a crazy story. We'll link to it in our show notes if you want to see, because he really did break down. I mean, he's got the email correspondence between him and his attacker where they're trying to extort money. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
And it's also a great example of how Medium is an awesome tool for writing an article.
That too.
I mean, this is one of the most interesting I've seen. I mean, you compare reading an article there compared to a newspaper, for example, and it's just so much more rich content, a better layout. And it just seems like if we have to think about some of those different networks and tools that are probably going to do really well this year, I think Medium's going to be on top of the list. And I know they just got a bunch of money as well. I think $20 or $25 million in funding.
Yeah, I think you're right. $25 million. Amber, are you still rocking the Android phone?
Well, here's the thing, Sarah. As you know, I was rocking an Android phone for a long time.
Yeah.
Now I'm using an iPhone again because I just started to get too frustrated with the fact that all of the best apps were coming out first for the iPhone. And as much as I wanted to wait for that to change, it didn't. But it looks like at least the Twitter app for Android has some good new features and functionality that will make a lot of people happy, like new photo tools and recommended tweets, too.
Yeah, this is actually kind of interesting, and I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. But this update, and this is, you know, for the Android app only, also includes, as you mentioned, something about recommended tweets. But what it will do is, let's say you refresh your timeline. Let's say, you know, since 4 seconds ago when you refreshed before, there aren't any new tweets to load. And obviously, the fewer people you follow, the probably fewer tweets that you're going to see overall. The app will show you popular tweets, topics that are trending, or accounts that you might want to follow up at the top so that Twitter doesn't seem like kind of like, nothing's happening yet. Nobody has said anything yet. So Twitter's quite basically going to populate that need to see new stuff for you. I don't know if I like that, though, Amber, because I don't like my news feed to be cluttered with kind of Twitter pushing suggested users on me or trending topics that I might not care about at all.
Yeah, the only place that I really like those recommendations is on Amazon. And I would like to limit it to that because I feel like otherwise I'm in the same boat. I just don't like getting a bunch of different things recommended to me as far as me reading different types of content. And I don't think they do a really great job of that. I even don't like the recommended people to follow on Twitter. I don't think I've ever followed anyone there because I kind of just hate that they keep showing up. So it's one of those things that I don't use on a regular basis. But I think that all of these apps are just trying so hard to get smarter and smarter and kind of get inside our heads and predict human behavior, and very few of them are good. I mean, that's why I think Amazon's amazing at it. I think Pandora is another service that does a really great job, but I'm not sure that this is something that people are going to want. I mean, in a sense, with Facebook talking about paper, they're trying to do a bit of that too.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, this is rolling out for Android users now. Twitter says it's coming to iOS soon, but at least that's one situation, Amber, where you can say, if only I had that Android phone, I could follow all these recommended people that I don't want to follow.
Just one.
Every once in a while, Twitter will recommend somebody to me. And that's only when I'm on the web version of Twitter, which is not that often because I don't see any of this stuff in Tweetbot. But I'll go, maybe I will follow that person. Like, I followed Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the actor, the other day because I'm like, I don't know, I like him. Maybe he's great on Twitter. He doesn't really tweet that much. But in general, I just don't really pay attention to it either.
Yeah, I don't pay attention at all. Although I follow a lot of people. I can't stop following people. It's a bit of a problem.
You do follow a lot of people. I don't know how you do it.
My feed is just so random. It's all over the map.
Right.
Okay, last week we said we weren't going to talk about Justin Bieber, but it's hard not to talk about him now.
Yeah.
It's not just about him getting arrested in Miami, but yesterday he turned himself in to the Toronto police because of an assault that involved a limo driver that took place back in December. And it's also the same time that his new album or song is coming out, Sarah, which is neat timing, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a lot of people talking about Justin Bieber again on Twitter, and this is a really interesting view of how maybe it says how Justin Bieber's troubles exposed Twitter's Achilles heel. This is an article in the New York Times, and it's neat insight into how they think that the conversation has changed on Twitter, and not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah, I really loved this article from Jenna Wortham a few days ago in the New York Times. It really resonated with me because I know that I'm guilty of this too. And it's, let's say something like, you know, Justin Bieber gets arrested it's a news story, but it's certainly not the most important thing happening in the world. But what happens, especially on Twitter, and I know it happens with certain communities more than others, though, is that it turns into like a snark fest and everybody is trying to come up with that funny one-liner, and Twitter's perfect for that because you have to get creative about saying it in 140 characters or less that, you know, will get you all the, you know, as many retweets or favorites or will get picked up, and retweeted by somebody who has more followers than you, because there's this feeling of acceptance that happens when you do that. I mean, I do this all the time, Amber, and I'm really, you know, I'm not trying to be totally, the big jerk about it, but it's this does happen on Twitter. It certainly happens even with people that are in the news business that I follow because they actually bring me really relevant content. There are a lot of comedians, you know, in that space as well. And it's sort of like, well, what does this mean for Twitter? I mean, is it a bad thing that everybody's kind of trying to be funny and get attention that way? The point that Wortham makes is it's not really that there's anything wrong with it. It's just that it's evolving into a certain kind of voice and tone with these stories.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's funny because just this morning I had read a tweet that Mayor Rob Ford, the mayor of Toronto, had stuck up and defended Justin Bieber and said that, hey, you know, guys, I know, exactly, it's hysterical, lay off, you know, he's only 19, and I don't know what Ford's excuse is, but nonetheless, I had to do everything in my power not to tweet out something that was kind of aggressive and angry towards Ford, because I do agree with him in some sense, but he's a total idiot. So it was one of those things where I stopped myself. I said, you know what, there are enough people out there kind of making fun of this, and you just feel like more and more you're just kind of jumping on the bandwagon of people. It feels a little bit like bullying to me. I know it's a sort of softer, in a softer way in some sense, but I do worry about that kind of mob mentality that they talk about in the article, because I do think we see a lot of that. I mean, I'm even at the point, okay, you know what, I know Justin Bieber obviously has done a lot of things that are totally senseless, but he is 19. I'm starting to feel kind of sorry for him in terms of what I'm seeing people say about him on Twitter. It's this attack mentality that people have lost all, you know. What makes us unique as humans is that we have feelings, and I just I worry a little bit about how it can turn quickly.
Yeah, I mean,
in a bad way.
Exactly. There are certain people, you know, especially if they're in positions of power, you know, they have a lot of money, they're in politics, so it's like, oh, that's an easy target. But in general, it's like, what does it say about the rest of us when you've kind of got somebody in meltdown mode, and it turns into who can tweet the funniest thing that gets the most retweets?
So exactly.
That, you know, so you feel better about yourself, and it's like, well, that's not really contributing to anything.
And if you're going to do it to someone who's in office, like Mayor Ford, who's in his 40s and the city elected him, or at least some people in the city, you know, I kind of think, okay, you know what? He's sort of opened himself up to that. And it's not that, I mean, Justin Bieber is still a public figure, but he's just kind of doing what he loved as a child, and he's only 19. And so I tried not to write anything snarky, but I felt that, you know, you there is that desire, right? And I think a lot of people are going that direction, but I hopefully it doesn't continue to be like that, but I doubt it. I think it's going to get even worse, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. It's going to get darker before it gets lighter. All right, well, with that, we can talk about getting darker, as in sunglasses. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that was a smooth transition. Warby Parker. Warby Parker is our first sponsor of the Social Hour today. And we've talked about Warby Parker on the past on the show, but we're going to do it again. They're making big changes to the eyewear industry, not just the cost. They're much cheaper than the kind of eyeglasses that you're going to see at those, you know, fancy eyeglass stores. Sunglasses, prescription glasses, they're crazy. It's such a racket. People are paying like hundreds and hundreds of dollars for glasses that are nice, sure, but they're just overpriced. And sometimes they're not even really that interesting. I mean, this is something that you're wearing on your face. You want it to look cool too, right? Few manufacturers keep their prices artificially high. Warby Parker is aware of that and wants to give us all better options. Warby Parker glasses are high quality. They're super stylish. They've got prescription glasses, sunglasses. I mean, I don't wear prescription glasses, but Amber, I know you do. And
I sure do, yeah.
Yeah, we've both enjoyed Warby Parker glasses as well. And yours are really cute. They've got the red frame.
Yes. I know. I have them upstairs. They have beautiful red frames. I absolutely love them. They're just kind of fun and super easy to order from the company, too. They've got lots of great stylish choices, which is always good.
They do. And they start at just $95, which includes prescription lenses. Now, that you might say, where's the catch? But there is none. It's really cool. So here's what you do. If you're not already a Warby Parker owner, or even if you are, you know, it'll be summer again pretty soon. You want to get a new pair of sunglasses or a new pair of glasses. It's always nice to have a few different types of glasses fashion. If you go to warbyparker.com/social hour, you actually have the opportunity to try in person 5 pairs of glasses completely free. What you do is you go on the website, you look at some of the styles, you decide the 5 that you're into, but it can be hard to know how something's going to look on your face. If, you know, it hugs the bridge of your nose weirdly. I always have that problem with sunglasses or glasses in general. And what Warby Parker will do is send you those 5 glasses to try in person. So I might be, I'm on the website and I say, God, I love the tortoiseshell glasses. Are these going to look good? Yeah. Turns out I'm pretty happy with them.
They feel nice.
Yeah, thank you, Amber. Thank you very much. But maybe I thought the same thing about these sort of a kind of cool maroon glasses. Well, these might be nice. And it turns out that actually they don't feel that good. They're a little small for me. They're kind of pinching me. So I wouldn't know that if I were just to go ahead and buy these outright online. So this is your opportunity to be like, oh, okay, that's perfect. Now I really know, out of the glasses that I thought were all potentials, what's really the perfect pair for me. Now, of course, these are sunglasses, but they're not all sunglasses. These could be the glasses that help you see every day as well. They include a special frame box, prepaid shipping label for easy return, because you send them back. Then you obviously choose the glasses that you want. And then Warby Parker will send you that final pair of glasses. Of course, these are, you're just trying them on. But it's the perfect situation because, it's hard to buy something as personal as a pair of glasses before knowing really how they look on you. And so Warby Parker's kind of figured that all out. It's fun. It's easy. You sort of eliminate the pain. You don't have to go down to a store. And the low price and wide selection of styles, you can own a few pairs. I mean, for, the few $100 that you might spend on a pair of glasses somewhere else, you can get a few pairs of Warby Parkers. And then people are like, oh, yeah, I love it when you wear those glasses. Those are so different than those other glasses that you wear. So free home try-on. That is your answer. WarbyParker.com/social hour. And we thank them for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour.
I want to go get some more glasses now. You've inspired me.
I do too.
I actually have never had prescription glasses that have a different color frame. I've always been kind of boring, like tortoise shell or whatever, pretty basic brown or black. But when I picked out the red ones, I absolutely love them. They're just kind of fun, and it makes you realize what a great little accessory it is too.
Yeah. I don't wear prescription glasses. I'm sure it's just a matter of time, but I do have a sunglass addiction. And ever since Warby Parker, who I was familiar with, but once they became a sponsor on Twit, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a good idea. This just makes perfect sense. Now I have several pairs, and I tend to go for like really big ones that take over your whole face. But that's just my style. Got to go incognito sometimes. All right, Amber, what is our social tip of the week?
Okay, this is a simple one, and I believe that this new feature was built into the Twitter app for iPhone when it was released, the new version in December, but I didn't stumble across it until just recently when I was at a conference in Phoenix. I found myself, my laptop was dead, I didn't have my power cord with me, and I needed to do some research on my iPhone, and I was looking through a bunch of different articles trying to figure out a great way to be able to save those articles, stuff that I was finding on Twitter and links that I was finding there. And there's a little option to save it, send it to your reading list now from Twitter. And that reading list is available within Safari. And it's a really neat workflow to be able to research if you're going through Twitter and finding good stuff, to simply send it out that way to Safari and have your list there. So it helped me a lot for all the research because I knew it was saved and easy to follow up. Because I think for me, Twitter is one of the top places where I find some of the best and most recent news in the digital marketing and social media space too.
Yeah, I love this. This is it makes a lot of sense, especially since when I'm reading my Twitter news stream, I mean, there's like two ways to do it, right? You're just kind of skimming stuff, but there's often a ton of articles that I'm like, ooh, you know, I kind of want to read that right now, but it's going to take me out, and it just makes the workflow that much more smooth.
Yeah, and you used to just favorite them, right, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. I still do, but I find it's weird. It's like my behavior is starting to change because I know people really pay attention to faves now. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm like poised, ready to fave, and I'm like, I'm not faving this though, because I haven't even read it yet. And I'm uncomfortable like giving someone that thumbs up for an article that I'm really just bookmarking. I still do it, but try to be more selective.
I feel like you're so much more hip than I am because you're calling it fave. Like you've shortened it.
Oh, faves. No, that's a thing. That's a thing.
That's a thing. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay. I'm going to learn that lingo.
I've also noticed, this is actually going to make me sound like, you know, very not hip, but I've noticed that when somebody really likes a tweet, like let's say I tweeted something that was very funny, that a common reply is double fave, because that's impossible, but it's as if I like it so much I want to fave it twice.
Wow.
That's a thing. It's a thing, Amber. It's a thing. I didn't make it up.
Double fave.
Double fave.
Okay, I'm going to remember that. No, that's cool. It's good to learn. See, this is why you watch The Social Hour.
That's
listen
right.
to it,
because yeah,
you learn
yeah.
new lingo. But that I was not familiar with that. Although I know you're right. Everybody's favoriting so much more on Twitter, more so than they're retweeting or anything. I've noticed a big shift in that. So if you used to use favorites to save your articles, now you know if you're using the iPhone, you can, in the Twitter app, you can easily send them to Safari. And it's a great, great, quick way to be able to do research.
Love it. We got an email from a fellow named Marin, who actually works in marketing at this company called Stance, which is STAANCE. And we get a lot of suggestions from people saying, cover our app or our service. It's perfect for The Social Hour. But I actually think it's kind of interesting. I mean, he describes it as a social media platform which quantifies opinions that are based on social news and trending topics. So if something's trending, you can quickly agree or disagree. You can comment. You can share. You can engage with other people on this platform. But when you do comment, like you go ahead and say, Anthony, what did you say? Did you say yes? Yeah, so Anthony said, yes, Justin Bieber is a jerk. And it turns out that 100% of everybody else who responded agreed with Anthony. Now, this is a new question, and Marin was quick to point out that this service is still in beta, so it's not as if there's so much engagement just yet. But if Anthony wanted to go and say, you know, here is why I think Justin Bieber is a jerk, that would be something that he could comment on.
Okay, so you can add comments too, is that
you
right?
You can, yeah. So you can add context to it. And the whole idea that the team at Stance says is, with Twitter and Facebook, you're kind of just saying, here's what I think, and then that's sort of the end of it. I mean, yeah, people are commenting, but this is putting a little bit more of a structure around, let's talk about something that, you know, you probably have an opinion on, mm-hmm. whether, you know, whether it's a yes or no, it's an agree or disagree. So and Amber, some of these I honestly don't really have an opinion on, because I, you know, the things that are trending as far as pop culture goes sometimes don't reach me. But, you know, it's like the Super Bowl. Who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl? Do you think the economy is strong or weak? A lot of that stuff is, you know, it's pretty high level. But I like the idea of it. I wonder, and we're looking at sort of the navigation on the website, which is all sort of arrow keys, and it's nice and clean, and the layout is cool. I don't know how much I will be incentivized to head on over there without the community. And again, they're in their early stages, so the community obviously is expected to build. But what do you think about this idea of sort of like the yay or nay?
You know what? I actually love the name of this. I mean, I think it's a perfect name for something like this. Do you have to? I was just trying to figure out if you have to sign in and get an account.
I signed in with my Facebook account, which just populated my bio.
Okay.
And that also helped Stance know what, you know, my social graph was interested in.
Yeah, I think it's kind of neat. I mean, it's laid out really well, I think, for people to be able to simply vote yes or no with some of these items. So instead of just a basic kind of poll, they've made it almost more interesting if that is possible to do so. But I think it's neat. But I'm with you in the sense that I think it's going to depend on a community kind of coming there. I mean, it seems to me more like something that would almost be, you know, it could be linked to Facebook, which it probably is right now, but something that you would use within a Facebook type environment instead of maybe relying on polls, because it's so much more visual. So I think that makes it kind of interesting and pretty relevant for 2014.
Yeah, it's like a simplified poll, and you kind of feel good about it. I mean, I answered some questions yesterday, and it was like, I always felt good when everyone else had the same reaction as me. So, you know, it's like, we're all in this together type thing. So, yes, the team at Stance, thank you for alerting us. And do check in with us when you're out of beta or when things change, because we want to follow along.
Definitely. All right. I can take the next email. Okay. This is all about weather. So it's one of our favorite topics on the show. This is from Tim from the National Weather Service in El Paso, Texas, who says, I was excited to hear that Pinterest was adding support for animated GIFs, though I sense you were lukewarm about the announcement. For us in the weather, our business animated GIFs are great. That is one reason I prefer Google Plus over Facebook. Weather is always moving. Instead of showing a static image of a radar, it is much better to show an animated radar image. It allows people to see which direction and how quickly the weather is moving. Here's my first animated GIF I posted to Pinterest. It shows how the lake ice on Lake Michigan has expanded over the last month. Kind of cool.
I agree. And
that's a good point.
You know, when we were talking about this, I mentioned, oh, yeah, if you were going to post something like, you know, a woman in a dress on a fashion runway, I could see where the animated GIF would work, because you can see kind of how it moves and, oh, yeah, it's a pretty dress. Oh, look at the train. But I didn't even, that was a very obvious, like, oh, because Pinterest is about fashion. But this is a whole area that I never even thought of, but it makes perfect sense.
It really does.
Weather is always moving, and that works really well. I mean, a static image on Pinterest would be so much less compelling in this particular case.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool use of it. You know, it always fascinates me how much more creative people are than I am, in the sense that I love to look at how people are using Pinterest and just different ways they're able to share their passions, whatever it might be, whether it's weather or fashion or something else. And this is just one example of someone, you know, I would never think, like you said, of weather being something people are sharing on Pinterest. But clearly, it's a pretty simple and straightforward and obvious thing to be able to do. So thank you so much, Tim, for sharing this. And you have a good point. You have found Sarah and I wrong once again on the Social Hour.
That's right, Tim.
It happened.
Weather people schooling us again.
I know.
Keep it coming. I'd like to learn. Mike Tabbert, who frequently writes in, hello, Mike, says, Amber and Sarah, I was wondering what your thoughts were on cross-platform posting services such as Buffer App and SocialBa.com. Have we talked about SocialBa before?
I don't think so.
I'm going to look it up right now, because I don't want to say that I've never used it if somehow I've just forgotten. This is an extension. And I actually think we've either covered it, Amber, or I've heard about it somewhere as a Chrome extension, although it looks like it's an extension for pretty much all the big browsers. But yeah, the idea is you might want to, let's say I've got a new episode of i5 for the iPhone. Shot it yesterday. Now I want to remind people that it exists. Well, what do I do? Do I compose a tweet on Twitter? Then do I go to Facebook and compose a Facebook update? And then do I head over to Google Plus and do that there? Or can I just do it in one place and cross-post everywhere, saving myself time and making sure that nobody misses my very important update? Well, I know my answer is always, it feels to me like I'm not trying hard enough if I only construct my update one way, and I don't know if that's the right answer, but that's just the way that I've always kind of felt is like, if somebody sees the way I worded, hey, check out my new show on Facebook, and it's the exact same way that I worded it on Twitter, I feel like that they will know that I just cross-posted, and somehow that seems lazy of me.
It feels like cheating, right?
Yeah, but I don't know why I feel that way. I don't begrudge other people who do that.
I know. You know, it's interesting because Scott Stratton, who we've had on the show before, he for years has been telling people not to cross post. And at first I was like, I don't know, Scott. I mean, I think there's a time and a place where you can do it if it's a simple post. But more and more, as you start to see how all of these different social networks operate, you realize that they all have their own lingo, right, Sarah? I mean,
yeah.
There's a certain language. There are certain characters that you use. And you feel almost cheated when you see someone who's posting something both on Twitter that went to Facebook. And obviously it has the @ symbols and all those different things, and it wasn't really meant for that audience. So I'm trying to stop doing that. It doesn't mean that you can't use some of these apps, because I think once in a while it's okay to do that, especially for scheduling, when you want a certain message to go out at a certain point to a bunch of different networks, and it's pretty straightforward. Like, let's say you're running a contest and you just want to send out a link. Well, who cares if it's customized for my exact Facebook audience? But I think people are getting a little more savvy about this, and generally speaking, I think you'll get less engagement than if you were to do almost like a native post on each of the different networks.
I think so too. And also, I mean, unless you are really, really dedicated, I find that I'll forget a network here and there, and then I'll be like, oh, you know, I sort of missed an opportunity there, because I was really excited about sharing this whatever I wanted to share with people, and I forgot about Facebook or that sort of thing. So I think you're right. I think it's one of those things that you kind of have to feel it out. You don't want to be somebody who's spamming all of your networks. That's certainly not the goal. But at the same time, it's not as if it's wrong to cross-post. It feels to me like the trend has shifted away from cross-posting. But I don't think it's always a bad thing. It really just depends on how you use it.
Yeah. And I think to your point, I mean, this is one of the issues that I'm running into now, is that I want to keep posting to Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and Pinterest as well, and even LinkedIn. But I don't really have a good system in place to be posting to all of them on a regular basis. So I keep trying to get better. And it seems like I can only give about two different networks enough attention.
Yeah.
I just can't do all four or five. I don't know how other people do it. But, right now I'm trying to post more on Facebook. And then I'm on Twitter a lot, and on LinkedIn to a certain extent. And some of them just kind of fall to the wayside. And I have never been able to post to more than two or three in a really timely and effective way. And I don't know if that will change, and hopefully that's okay.
Yeah, I feel like we get these emails, or these questions, really. They're not always emails, but it's a very common thing. It's sort of just like, hey, what's the etiquette? What is the social media etiquette that I should follow? And it sounds so vague, but I feel like your and my responses are always the same, and it's kind of comes down to like the common sense of how you interact with your audience. Whoever that audience is, whoever your community is, it's like you kind of have to use your best judgment. Like, am I tweeting too much? Did I just say this? Am I, kind of like beating it into the folks who follow me, that I really want them to read this article, that sort of thing? Is it going to annoy them? I mean, this is a constant conversation that I have with myself. I mean, it seems sort of silly, but I don't think that there's just not a here's the way to act on social media, go for it. Because it just depends on who's listening to you.
It does. And I mean, I think that's what you have to start to think a lot about as well. I mean, when you post to Facebook, who is your audience? Who are you trying to reach out to on Facebook? And you'll probably find it's a very different audience than Twitter, than Pinterest, and even Google Plus. I know on Google Plus, for example, I kind of feel uncomfortable posting anything that isn't tech related on Google Plus, because my community there, they're all tech people. I don't know.
Right.
That's just the way it happened.
Yeah.
Whereas on Facebook, I feel like, okay, if I were going on a trip somewhere and I wanted to post a picture, that would be okay. I'd probably do the same thing on Twitter, but not on LinkedIn. So you have to think a lot about the audiences. And you know what? Maybe even write it down on a piece of paper, like just do a bunch of different columns and say, these are the audiences. This is the type of content they would like, if you're really trying to focus in on being more effective through these channels.
Exactly. I agree. It's fine. It's on Twitter, I have the same problem all the time. You know, I'll kind of go off the rails about something, and it's like in the back of my mind, I'm like, does anyone really want to know this about me because they kind of see me as something else. But I'm multifaceted.
You're feisty on Twitter, Sarah.
I know. I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I was on NSFW, which obviously is a show on Twitter. It's, you know, it's a little, I guess you'd call it off-color comedy every once in a while. And it's like, you know, we've got this whole different chat room. It's not our regular chat room. It's like the off-topic chat room and people are swearing, you know, and it's like, yeah. I was like, it's like somebody like put a whole like tub of ice cream in front of me and it's like, you can eat it. You can eat the whole thing. And I'm like, can I do this? I feel so weird, you know, it's a different side of me. But yes, I like to be a little feisty on Twitter.
Just before we go on, do you find also, I'm starting to do this more and more on Twitter. I used to not think a lot about who was following me on Twitter. You know, I thought, okay, you know what? I kind of just post what I want to post. Most of the stuff is hopefully pretty relevant and it's pretty PG, but I'm starting to think about, oh, that person's following me. You know, it's the weirdest thing today when I was thinking about, okay, I'm going to post some snarky comment about Justin Bieber. I know someone who is sort of close to his manager. And I thought, oh, I better not do that. You know, I'm just thinking about that so much more and the effect it has and the people who are watching. It's like I'm really super paranoid and I'm not on any drugs.
Yes. I have the exact same issues that you do. And sometimes it's before I hit the tweet button. And sometimes it's after the fact because someone will reply to me or maybe they'll fave a tweet or in some other way I'm like, oh gosh, that somehow affects me, the fact that you read that, because I wasn't thinking about that at the time. And yeah, I do think like, oh yeah, it's easy to have like a little quip about somebody that I don't know. But again, yeah, you mentioned, you know, being close to a celebrity's manager. It's like, I know enough people who are sort of in the entertainment industry or any industry really, where it's like, none of us are very far removed from anybody at this point.
Anymore. You're exactly right.
Yeah. And you don't want to offend the wrong people.
You do not want to offend it. Okay. So I know we're going to go do an ad now, but just to tease our rad or fad, this will be not about offending anyone, but about pleasing your boss. So everybody should listen up. Please your boss and potentially make money at the same time.
Oh, I like the idea of that. I will please for money. No, you know what? I'm not going to say that. That is, I retract that statement. But what I don't retract is the idea that we can all be fabulous designers. No training required, no schooling, no classes, because you don't actually have to do it yourself. If you have a great idea for a design, but you just aren't an artist or you're not capable, you don't have the time. Maybe you're fabulously talented, but you just simply don't have the time to put together your next business card or, you know, a billboard or even a t-shirt design or even, you know, graphic design for your next app, something like that, a website, whatever. You go to 99 Designs because it connects you with graphic designers who are wildly talented, over 270,000 of them, by the way. So if you need a logo or any kind of graphic design, you find that designer for you at 99designs.com. So you go ahead and explain your project. What do you want built? Is it something simple? Is it, you know, again, if it's an app, you know, maybe it's a little bit more detailed. And what happens is it kind of goes out into the 99designs world, and then designers start coming in and submitting designs that are created for you, hand-tailored. Then you give the designers feedback. You kind of help them refine the designs, like, hey, I love this, but maybe the color palette, I want it to be a little bit more blue, whatever. And then you select and pay for the design you like the best. So you get a ton of variety right off of the top, and then by the time you're ready to pay, you've got the perfect design. You've already done all that back and forth. 99 Designs offers all kinds of marketing designs, an email template, for example, or a banner ad or infographic. You can even do a design that would wrap a vehicle. You know, you see vehicles that are like, they're ads on the freeway. I've always kind of wondered, how do you get that? You can do that at 99 Designs. I mean, that's a great advertisement right there. You drive to work and you're advertising your business. 99designs.com/social hour is the URL to use if you want some free stuff too. Maybe you've got a great idea for a design and you're not so interested in upgrading to a power pack. Well, what if I told you that the power pack that usually costs $99 would be completely free to you? 99designs.com/social hour gives you the power pack that gives you more designer time and attention. Your design gets featured in their marketplace. Basically, more designers will see it and jump on your idea, and you'll get twice as many designs. So it just makes perfect sense. $99 power pack completely free at 99 Designs when you go to 99designs.com/social hour. We love 99 Designs and we thank them for sponsoring us. All right, Amber, how do I make my boss happy?
Okay, so this is a tool. It's called Rocket Trip. And what it does, it allows companies to better manage expenses, money that employees are spending when they travel. And I'm sure you have seen this over your career, Sarah. I see it all the time where sometimes employees are staying at really, really fancy luxury hotels or spending too much money going out for expensive dinners. And they're not really thinking about the company's bottom line and not really thinking about how to be respectful of the company's money. So what this tool allows a company to do is to give an employee a budget for a trip. And let's say you get $300 for a trip, and then, well, let's say more, let's say $1,000. And then you can book your flight, your car rental, your hotel, get food, all of those different things. And at the end of the trip, you send receipts back to the company, and this can all be done through Rocket Trip, and you get rewards if you save the company money. So the gist of it is that for every $2 you save the company, essentially you get a dollar back, either in cash or through gift cards. So it's trying to give employees incentive to be more careful about budgets when they're on the road.
I love this idea. Rocket Trip. Get a trip budget, then you book your trip, send receipts, get rewards. Boss is happier. Well, have you ever used this, Amber? I mean, this is like, well, I guess you don't really have a boss because you work for yourself, but this seems perfect for someone like you who's always on the go.
We all have bosses, Sarah. We just call them clients.
Oh, I see.
And they're always careful about stuff like this. But when I travel, for example, the speakers bureau that I work for, traditionally they'll book all of the trip and I'll have a travel allowance and those type of things. So it may not work out in that scenario. But if I were working for just one company, I think it becomes kind of interesting because I think for a lot of people, you know, you would do this if you want to be able to maybe make a little bit of money off your trip in some ways. Uh-huh. And at the end of the day, all of us don't need to have steak dinners every night. You may be happy with just a smoothie and a gift card to Amazon. That's probably what I would do. I would make a real game out of this. And this is almost like, it's almost like gamifying expenses in some ways,
yeah.
Right? You're getting rewards. And I think it's very interesting. It's something that I could see a lot of companies doing it and a lot of employees getting really excited about it too.
It's cool because, you know, we don't do a lot of travel now for my work currently, but I certainly have in the past. And yeah, depending on which company you work for, maybe it's a large business and there's per diem or small company or whatever, it's always different. But in general, the company is like, spend as little money as possible. And there's a lot of money that kind of goes wasted on these, you know, all expense paid trips. And if you're in a line of work where you're required to travel a lot, yeah, there are little corners that you can cut and you can be a little bit more organized. And it does kind of make it a game. I mean, there are a lot of instances where it's like, well, you could order room service or you could, I don't know, go get something else. And it's like, well, you end up, you know, it's what's the difference? $30. But if at the end of the trip, it somehow ends up getting me good, you know, scoring points with the boss and a little bit more money back in my pocket, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if you got a $100 budget to stay in a hotel in a mid-sized city in the U.S. and you had a friend or a family member who lived there and you knew just by staying at their house, you could get a $50 gift card to Amazon. I mean, you would definitely do that. And I do think it's just, it's fun, it's creative. And at the end of the day, I think people will kind of jump on. So good luck to them. I think it's a relatively new venture. I haven't heard a lot about it, but it's a neat idea. And I haven't seen anyone try to gamify expenses so much. So I'll be using this in a presentation coming soon.
Good. I want to hear all about it. I want to hear how happy your clients are. KS Gant in our chat room, I just have to read this, says, but I don't want to make my boss happy. My boss is my enemy, my adversary.
Well, whoa. That's a whole other issue.
That is, yeah. Let's talk more about, no, actually, okay. That's a tough job. I mean, to say my boss is my enemy, I don't know. I can't imagine you like going to work every day.
That must be very difficult. You know what? It might be time to maybe look for a new work because I'm sure there are lots of nice bosses out there. So
yes, right.
Good luck with that because that can't be healthy.
Love your work, please.
Do some yoga maybe.
Yes, do some yoga. Hopefully after the end of this hour of the social hour, you feel a little bit happier about the state of your job and your social options and things that Facebook is doing and Twitter's innovative new Android app, all that good stuff. We had quite an hour, didn't we, Amber?
We did. I mean, and the possibility that you can build your own brand and maybe you won't have a boss one day. I mean, you could go to 99 Designs, you get all set up there, and maybe you can work for yourself one day. And that could be a dream for a lot of people or a nightmare if you don't like freedom.
Very true. When Amber and I strike it rich with our Skype filter company,
watch out, people.
You can come work for us.
Yes.
I don't know what your skill set is, but I'm sure we can find something nice for you.
We can, definitely. And you won't hate. You can't hate us.
No. We refuse to be your adversaries. If you do that to us, we will make your life miserable.
Sounds more like a threat. We should probably end the show now.
We should, yes. I'm sorry to threaten you, KS Gant. Thanks, everybody, for watching this episode of The Social Hour. We were right on the money. We made it in exactly an hour. Remember, we have a new time. If you're watching us live, you already know that. But Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, yes, 2 p.m. Eastern, still getting that committed to memory.
I know.
Is our new show. After the first of the year, we decided to move from Fridays to Thursdays. We're real happy with it, and hopefully more of you can watch us live. But, of course, all of the content on Twit, Social Hour included, is always on demand. You can subscribe to the show. twit.tv/TSH is the web URL to visit in your internet browser. Not only are all of our episodes there, but everything that we mention, the Medium post that we were talking about earlier where the guy got his Twitter handle stolen, it's that, you know, we'll add that to our show notes so you can read all of that and not worry about remembering what we talked about. And, you know, if you forget that Stance has two A's in it, we'll have all of that there too. It's just your show notes. Yeah, your cheat sheet.
And also, we just got a tweet from Dan who's saying, how do we tweet during the show? Because I know more and more people seem to be doing that with this new time slot. And I keep using hashtag social hour, but it's a good idea probably to at Amber Mack or at Sarah Elaine during the show, just so one of us sees it for sure. But you can also use hashtag social hour so we know the context of the conversation.
Agreed. Yeah, and Amber and I, if you're a new viewer or listener to the show, we had this whole debate last year about what's our official hashtag going to be, and Social Hour made the most sense to us because it was easier than The Social Hour, but there are other things that are tagged Social Hour out in the world, so that became a little bit more convoluted, but in general, you can certainly use that hashtag, but if you tweeted us directly, you can be guaranteed that we'll see it.
Yeah, and it seems like we've gotten into a flow where Sarah's monitoring the chat room. I'm kind of monitoring Twitter to make sure that we see everything. So we will see your message, and we would love for you to interact with us during the show.
Absolutely. Well, Amber, you were in Arizona since I last saw you. What does your week look like this time?
I'm home for a few days, and then I go to New Orleans, and I've never been there before. Oh, I go there in about a week, so looking forward to that. But I'm home, and I'll be back here next Thursday for the show, Sarah. So no hotel social hours. Don't worry. Don't have nightmares.
Oh, good. Good. Hotel. I will stop freaking out now, knowing that you will be in your basement office next week.
I will. I promise.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. We love you all. We'll be back here same time, same place next Thursday. Until then, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon. Mm-hmm.